Welcome to Unplugged here on MedUse Week and Onc Live. We're very happy today to have Guru here join us. We're now an expert on bladder cancer throughout the world. So Guru, can you introduce yourself and tell us about your location?
Yeah, thank you, Chandler, for the opportunity to discuss this therapy for advanced urothelial carcinoma that's evolving so fast. So I'm the GU Oncology and the Phase 1 Director at the Advent Health Cancer Institute in Orlando, Florida.
Yes, and you do a lot of Phase 1 studies as well as urothelial cancers there.
Correct. So my program, I lead both the GU Oncology program as well as the Phase 1 program. And the Phase 1 program includes trials across all solid tumors. So really, it's kind of a broader role looking at novel drugs across solid tumors.
I think it's great to have somebody with your experience doing clinical trials and somebody in Orlando, Florida. So it'd be great to have somebody to do clinical trials, not just in GU, but also in terms of Phase 1 studies. And so I think it's wonderful. You know, our theme today is metastatic urothelial cancer. And we've had two practice-changing studies at ESMO last year. EV-302, Dr. Tom Powles released it at ESMO last year, a large randomized Phase 3 study, EV-Pembro versus platinum doublet, whether it be cisplatin, gemcitabine, carboplatin, gemcitabine. They actually had to do an amendment. So during the study, patients started getting avalumumab, but like you mentioned, Guru, a lot of the patients did not receive avalumumab. So what are your thoughts about the top-line data for the EV-302?
I think the top-line data are very, very impressive. As we know, the overall survival improved from around 16 months in the control arm of gemplatinum to 31.5 months in the EV-Pembro arm. So that is an impressive improvement. The hazard ratio for survival was 0.47. And similarly, the PFS also doubled from around 6 months to around 12 months. Really impressive. The objective response rate improved also, of course, from around 44% for the gemplatinum arm to around 68% for EV-Pembro. The CR rate was also impressive. The CRs, complete remissions, in 29.1% with EV-Pembro versus 12.5% for gemplatinum. And now one of the things we need to get a better handle from this regimen is the durability of the responses. The median follow-up in the EV-302 trial was around a year and a half, which is about half of the follow-up seen in the CheckMate 901 trial. The GemCis-Nivo trial had nearly a three-year median follow-up. Now, what we know is that the EV-Pembro responses were quite durable in the preceding Phase 1 and Phase 2 trials. The median DOR in the more mature Phase 1b was approximately 2 years. We'll wait to see, but clearly the improvement in OS, PFS, objective response, and complete response are all very impressive with EV-Pembrolizumab.
Absolutely. And you know, for the community oncologists, we have to kind of think about, you know, what are the patients that you might not consider EV-Pembro? You know, the patients with uncontrolled diabetes, we always check a patient's glucose level before getting treatment. So if a patient has a glucose level above 250, 300, 400, we cannot give treatment on treatment day. Also, the hemoglobin A1C in the study was an 8. So is this something that you also look at, Guru, whenever you treat patients in terms of patients that you might want to kind of pause before you give EV-Pembro?
Yes. So good control of diabetes is important. Liver dysfunction is also important because the EV does need good liver function for metabolism. And so those are a consideration. Now, I don't want to suggest that patients with poorly controlled diabetes or liver dysfunction are great candidates for GemCis-Nivo, because the reality is that all of these regimens were tested in patients with fairly good performance status, 0 or 1 mostly, in both the trials. And as I said before, although the EV-302 trial allowed PS2 patients, there were very few PS2 patients in the trial, around 3-4%. So despite that, if you had in the real world a patient with borderline controlled diabetes, aggressive metastatic disease, and really cannot wait for diabetes control, you have to really weigh your priorities. When you're picking between these two regimens, you might want to go with GemCis-Nivo in a patient with poorly controlled diabetes and liver dysfunction in the real world But again, some of these things are shades of gray, and it also depends how much the liver dysfunction is. So I think it's a long discussion to have with the patient when you face a patient where EV could be problematic given poorly controlled diabetes, for example.
Absolutely. And you know, we have to be mindful of patients that might have pre-existing peripheral neuropathy from the diabetes as well. Some of the things that I've noticed in my practice, Guru, is, you know, these patients, when they start the EV Pembro, you have overlapping toxicities with rash. And so you have to be very mindful because the EV rash may not work well with steroids, but the pembrolizumab will. And so especially in the first month that I've seen, you have to be very mindful. I know the regimen is day 1, 8 in a 21-day cycle. So on the day 8, I really make sure that I see the patient and make sure that the skin, we don't have any lesions there, because it starts out at grade 1 and it can really take off. Any advice on that, Guru, on the rash or any other toxicity you see with EV Pembro?
Yes, the rash and the hyperglycemia are early toxicities with EV. The neuropathy, of course, is cumulative. I agree, the rash is something to be very vigilant about and to monitor patients very closely. As we all know, in a very small proportion of patients, Stevens-Johnson syndrome has been seen and has been actually fatal in a few cases. So clearly, rash is something to be very, very mindful of. The neuropathy can become problematic with time, so that is clearly something to monitor. The neuropathy tends to improve during a break, so interruption and dose reduction is definitely a strategy. But in my experience, I tend to consider dose reductions for neuropathy around the 5th or 6th month. And once it gets to a more problematic daily occurrence of significant grade 1, sometimes grade 2 is actually severe enough to bother patients quite a bit. So I tend to stop EV when it gets to a problematic grade 1, let's say daily neuropathy that tends to interfere with function.
Yeah, great points, Guru. And you know, we still have some patients that have graduated from the EV-301 in my practice, and they're monotherapy EV. And you know, the peripheral neuropathy really catches up with them when they get the treatment for so long. And I have actually some patients that have a CR with peripheral neuropathy that I don't re-challenge them. And scan after scan, they're doing really well. Do you have any patients like that, Guru, where patients have durable response? I mean, it's technically considered off-label. But, you know, patients, they don't want to continue treatment, and you don't want to give those patients that have peripheral neuropathy. What are your thoughts on patients that are not on treatment after EV because of peripheral neuropathy?
Yes, so neuropathy with EV has a slightly different quality to it than the cisplatin neuropathy. It can improve with time. There is a study in the literature showing that around 10 to 15% might actually resolve with time, and many of them can improve with time. I personally have not seen it completely resolve. But there is data in the literature to suggest that it might with time. Now, I think that during a break, if it improves, I think it's reasonable to resume with a dose reduction, although not necessarily. You could potentially wait. The longer you wait, the better you give some rest to the nerves to recover. So I think that it is reasonable to try another agent and get back to EV down the road. That's a strategy I have tried. So basically, a break during which if you see progression, try a non-neurotoxic drug perhaps before you get back to EV. So that is the strategy I've tried more often than resume EV itself.
Absolutely. And you know, the standard of care is to continue with EV until progression. But, you know, for the community oncologist, there are some patients that, you know, you have to kind of be mindful of, because this is mostly sensory neuropathy. And so as physicians, we're kind of seeing the patients in clinic, and are they having trouble getting up from a chair, from the exam table? They might have falls. And so that might be an indication of a sensory neuropathy. But this is something that all of us, that we have to kind of keep a close eye on. Because once you start having that neuropathy, you hold the treatment, you don't continue to put gasoline on the fire. So, Guru, great points there.
Yes, I agree. And the motor neuropathy, of course, is a sign of more serious neuropathy. And the sensory neuropathy tends to be easier to manage. Motor neuropathy can really lead to more serious dysfunction. So that is really something to watch out for. On this note, I will add that in patients who have significant neuropathy at baseline, I think the javelin paradigm is a consideration. in cisplatin ineligible patients with baseline neuropathy, the Javelin paradigm actually allowed grade 2 neuropathy. So in these patients, you're cisplatin ineligible, they are not candidates for EV pembro because they have, you know, grade 2 neuropathy. So I think gemcitabine carboplatin followed by avelumab is a consideration in cisplatin ineligible patients who are frail or vulnerable or have a significant neuropathy at baseline where you cannot deliver cisplatin or EV.